Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
While we have been on air, huge drama in the latest World Cup match. Sweden has beaten Japan by 2-1, but it was after a remarkable final few minutes, apparently, including 10 minutes of added time. With Sweden 2-0 up, 10 minutes to go, Japan, first of all, missed a penalty, hitting the underside of the crossbar, but the ball failing to cross the line. And then they scored to make it 2-1. And they dominated the final few minutes, including again hitting the crossbar, which then saw the ball bounce off the goalkeeper's back and hit the post and trickle across the goal line before going clear of danger. So, yet again, very dramatic end to a match in what has been a fantastic tournament for tension and for upsets. But the upshot of all of that is that Sweden make it through to the semis, where they will face Spain next Tuesday. 51551 for the text. Far too many drivers, says Damien, are checking their phones when their eyes need to be on the road. It is just not good enough. It's a very, very good point made by the guard, wasn't it? That you will cover 100 metres in 3 seconds driving at 120 kilometres an hour. Somebody else says on our conversation about climate change, I have started to travel by land and sea, being retired and able to take an extra day at each end. But please subsidise land travel, not airlines and fuel. It's a very good point. I'm making a documentary series at the moment, and when we have tried to slow travel instead of flying, we have found the costs to be exactly 11 times greater going by rail and by ferry than if you were to fly. Philip, saying that you care about climate change and actually caring about it are two very different things. No doubt the vast majority of the hundreds of thousands of us packing Dublin Airport this summer would say we care, but actions speak louder than words. And back to the speeding for one more. Martin says, Philip, I recently got a new car. It bleeps when I go over the limit, and when I stick to the proper speed, everyone passes me out. Most of these people must not have this technology, suggests Martin. Okay, we're convening the gathering after these.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Expert advice on vitamins to help build immunity at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Once upon a time, there was a charity that made books written by children for children. They sent their books all over Ireland, and they saved up to €45 on every pack of stamps they bought. But it wasn't magic. It was their OnPost Commerce Advantage card. It gives charities like Kids Own Publishing Partnership great discounts on their sending. Get your Advantage card at onpost.com/advantagecard to save on every stamp you stick and every parcel you send. OnPost Commerce, a world closer. T's and C's apply.
RTE Radio 1.
Jack Whitehall, settle down.
What? No, everything's wonderful, thank you. No.
Live at Three Arena, Saturday, October 7th.
Well, I'd rather look like Ron Weasley than Shrek.
Tickets available now.
Don't worry, that is a joke. I didn't actually say that.
But I thought of it, so I'm going to hell.
Presented by Aiken Promotions.
Comedy updates on RTE Radio 1.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
So as I said, time for the gathering. This week I'm joined in studio by Fianna Fáil TD for Meath East and Minister of State for Sport and Physical Education, Thomas Byrne. Eoghan O'Riordan, Labour TD for Dublin Bay North and Party Spokesperson on Education and Justice. Alison O'Connor, columnist with the Sunday Times, and Grainne Inniu, Dublin reporter at PA Media. Good morning, everybody. How are we all? Eoghan, can I start with you and the difficulties that we were reporting during the week of schools to get a full complement of teachers ahead of the start of the new school year? Do you worry about schools struggling to fill posts?
I do. It's an ongoing problem. It's been around for quite a while. Some of it you can put at the, you know, at the government's door, but some of it you can't. I mean, there's a cohort of teachers who missed out during COVID of going abroad and taking that opportunity, and that's built up now a little bit. But there are other problems, particularly in Dublin.
Housing.
It's
really
all housing. It's all the affordability of living in Dublin, of affording rent, of building a life in Dublin for yourself. And particularly in Dublin, it's becoming an acute problem. There has been a problem around certain subjects for quite a while. Individual subjects such as home economics and geography and Irish, but now it's right across the board. So there isn't a simple fix. I'd like to sit here and pretend that there is.
Well, okay.
I know that's the job of a political opposition GD to say that there is a simple fix, but there isn't. But
can we discuss one possible fix here, and that is the Dublin premium. Yeah. Is it time to pay one?
I think it is. At least it's time to investigate it, because it's not something that would just be unique to Ireland. It is in the UK. They've had it for about 100 years, since the 1920s, various different types of allowances for public servants in London. Now, it wouldn't be a cheap measure, and it wouldn't be the only thing that you should investigate. But we're at the stage now where schools in Dublin can't staff themselves. They can't fill their staff rooms with fully qualified teachers. You have second level schools that can't offer subjects or can't offer trained people to teach the subjects, as a result of which children are failing. So it's being failed. So it's not the only solution. There are other issues around how we train teachers in certain subjects, the T4 subjects, and having these regional colleges, which means that some people, you know, it's difficult for people from Dublin sometimes to be attracted to go to Sligo or Limerick or elsewhere to learn these particular skills. I'm not sure if that's something that can be resolved overnight either, but certainly it's a cost of living issue in the main. The Department of Education, I know, though, will be saying to the minister that this is a short-term issue. In 5 years' time, the demographic changes will have eased out.
That baby bulge will have worked through.
And don't start changing the system that we have. That's going to be very expensive forever. But I do think, in terms of what London has done, should certainly be investigated in Dublin.
In the here and now, Thomas Byrne, can you think of a better solution than a Dublin allowance?
Well, what happens with pay is that there are negotiations between the government and the trade unions. That happens every couple of years. And I've no doubt that if the unions want to propose this, that they will be looking at it as part of the pay talks. But that's something that will have to come out of that. It's not a separate initiative. The same pot is there in terms of public pay. We want to make sure teachers are paid fairly.
Hang on, are you going to sit back and let the unions drive policy, or are you going to try and solve the problem?
No, the government is driving policy. But what happens with pay is that there are negotiations with unions. And I don't know if unions put this forward, or have teachers' unions put this forward.
Yeah, the NTO passed a motion in favour.
If they have, then this will be presumably part of the pay.
But again, my
pay
point
talks.
Is still well made. Are you sitting back and waiting for the unions or somebody else to bring a solution to you, or are you going to try and find
one? No, we're not. Because, in fact, over the last number of years, to reflect the cost of living pressures that all public servants are under, there have been significant pay increases for public servants in the last couple of years, and that includes teachers. And I absolutely acknowledge that there are massive pressures on teachers, cost of living, housing in particular, absolutely correct about that. There are things that we can do. There are initiatives that the department has been taking. The Irish language is always a particular problem. Languages in general are a problem. And we see now that the bubble is moving through secondary school now, and I think that's where the issue is most acute. But I have met teachers who've come back from abroad, and they don't all stay forever abroad. And one of them said to me, well, now I know the value of a union, and which they didn't have in the particular country that they had been in before. Mm-hmm. And they were subject to, you know, where the pay was better, it was definitely much more restrictive work practices. So there are pros and cons of that. And that, look, people take a few years off regularly. But there's a lot of work going on in the department in terms of teacher supply. It's a huge issue.
Gunninie, doctors, guards, nurses won't thank me for suggesting that they're in the Pandora's box. But if you were to give a Dublin allowance to teachers, it does open a Pandora's box.
Well, that's what I was thinking. You know, the issues facing teachers are not unique to them in a lot of ways. There are people who go abroad, such as nurses, to spend a year abroad. There are people who find a lifestyle there that suits them and, you know, can't quite tear themselves away. And there are people who return. But my concern about paying a Dublin allowance for teachers is the other workers in the capital who are facing cost of living problems, rent increases. Where do you draw the line? You know, it doesn't even stop at public servants. I understand there's a shortage, but we are at full employment and maybe even above that at the moment, which is part of the issue. There are issues in finding people to work in kind of the retail sector as well. So if you were to bring in or look into a kind of an allowance for living in Dublin, I think you'd have to look at what other groups would be equally entitled to needing a boost from
basically,
living in the capital.
Eoin O'Riordan, this idea means that the Minister for Finance might as well stick a sign on his door saying free money today, form a queue.
Well, that, or we have a city that can't have a teacher in it. I mean, there's no easy choices for government when you're serious about it. And I'm not suggesting the Dublin allowance is the answer, but it has been in London for 100 years. There's a graduated scale. There's waitings depending on where you are in the city. But they made that decision 100 years ago and they've kept with it through various different forms.
But have you done a costing on this?
It's not going to be cheap. I mean, it depends how much you would actually pay, and, you know, because it can be quite generous from London.
£6,000 is the figure that is quoted because that's what's paid in London, isn't it?
Yeah, our initial figure was something around 31 million, but that was only for teachers. As Gwen has quite rightly said, you would have to expand it. It would be unreasonable to suggest only one public servant would benefit. But having said that, what do you do when you have teachers who can't live in this capital city? They just can't live. They can't afford to live in the capital city. That is something that's just going to have to... That problem is going to have to be addressed.
Alison O'Connor, can you apply some of the blue sky thinking for which you are famed to this problem, or has it eluded even you?
No pressure, eh? I was listening to your item on this, I think it was yesterday, wasn't it? And where I was saying that our teachers are actually amongst the highest paid in the EU, and yet it still says so much that they're having this difficulty. And as a parent of school-going children in secondary school, it is of particular relevance to me. As Aon said, it's not easily sorted. But already the INMO has previously spoken about even accommodation being built on hospital sites or elsewhere for nurses. So it's a very difficult problem for the government, because if you decide to do it, how many do you do it for? Where do you stop? How much do you make the allowance? But it just feeds in as well. And I'd say this as someone who's just returned recently from a holiday, an Irish holiday, where when you weren't feeling depressed about the weather, you were feeling quite depressed about the price of everything. We are just such an eye-wateringly expensive country in every single way. So I think to be a young person now and trying to pay for rent, trying to find somewhere to live, even, you know, trying to pay for socialising, all of that, it is very, very difficult. And looking at that Daft survey yesterday where it said that fewer than 1,200 homes are available to rent nationally. You know, we can get in all that's been, you said there about the Minister for Finance putting a sign up on his door. That man has no need of any sign, and there's already a queue, you know, a kilometre down the road, because everybody thinks there's so much free money going to come out in the budget this October. The problem is that there are so many different things that look like they're justified for getting extra money. And the added kicker, I've noticed that the Taoiseach Leo Varadkar is being very busy in August. He was in, as we know, he was in Belfast this week. He's been in Mayo. And he's a bit of a loose cannon when it comes to these things. You can see that the Minister for Finance and the Minister for Public Expenditure sent out quite a strong message before the break with the economic statement and that they were holding fast. But maybe they didn't count on the Taoiseach being around the country on his own in August.
Thomas Byrne?
Well, look, what I'd say as well, it is housing. And, you know, we talk about the lack of availability of housing, high rents. You know, the next time you object to apartments in Dublin, where's your kids going to live? Where's your teachers going to live? Where are your nurses going to live? I mean, that's the reality of it. I think people need to ask that question as part of their planning objection, because we know that multiples of the 1,200 units that are available on Daft apparently have been objected to in Dublin.
Aon, I might be wrong, but I think he's having a dig at you.
I'm not actually. No, I'm genuinely not. Because
Well, I mean, if you want to go down that road, we can. But the only people who object to social housing in my constituency are Fianna Fáil representatives.
Well, I certainly don't.
Well, I'm telling you baldly and bluntly that in my constituency, the only representatives who object to social housing.
And Fianna Fáil not actually going through the development of the Oscar Traynor Road against massive opposition.
Well, I didn't object to that, and I think
Fianna Fáil put that through.
Well, I think in fairness, Thomas, I think in fairness, what I was trying to do was have.
And it wasn't
having
a dig at you.
Well,
it
is about housing. It is about the supply of housing, about the affordability of housing. But there's any amount of issues that government could have addressed in terms of housing that they haven't done. But it's a longer term issue here as well. But if we have a city where teachers can't afford to live in it, well, then that's a major problem. And we have to get beyond, if I might suggest, Thomas, the point scoring and have a proper, you know, long-term view of how we can address it.
It's also about the affordability of mortgages as well. Gráinne, what's happening in government circles here? Alison suggests that all of the other ministers are holding the line. fiscal discipline, stare him in the whites of the eyes and say no, except for Leo Varadkar. Do you think that there's going to be a move as a consequence on mortgage interest relief?
I think it's something that actually that has been in the ether of, or the edge of the public debate for a while, like, and these are questions that we brought up quite regularly, that householders are feeling the pinch when it comes to mortgage increases and interest rates, which is are being increased to try and get a handle on inflation. So it would be a universal middle income kind of win for the government. And I think that's the attractiveness of it. Also, it's a cost of living measure. But you got to be careful that it doesn't add to inflation. I don't really see it as a targeted measure. In a lot of opinion polls, a lot of people are, you know, concerned about the cost of living is high up. I think in the Sunday Independent poll at the weekend, 43% of people said it was one of their main concerns. Everyone is feeling it. It doesn't mean the government needs to prioritise everyone in helping deal with cost of living linked measures. That being said, I mean, it looks like Leo Varadkar hinted strongly that they're going to have some, they're looking at some sort of mortgage relief that's linked to those who are in the most distress. So those who are about to lose their homes, that is the inference from that, which would be more targeted, okay. But you just could not do it across the
Thomas
board.
Byrne, is the Taoiseach off on a solo run?
No, the Taoiseach is expressing his view. The reality is that we have about €1 billion in tax measures. So that would have to include everything, including any mortgage interest tax relief that the government might want to do. And I come from one of the most heavily mortgaged constituencies in the country. So I certainly am very interested in this. But, when you know, the word targeted is used, and rightly used, I think, by politicians, means that I think that's another word for a small amount of very vulnerable people. The other thing that could possibly happen, and I certainly would be in favour of it, would be on the expenditure side, returning maybe to some form of mortgage interest supplement, again, to be targeted in some way. But that would be separate to the taxation measures that we could do. I think the taxation measures are limited by the overall picture.
The problem is you guys are not good at targeting. You tend to favour universal payments, don't you? Because you don't want to make yourself unpopular with the people that you don't give it to.
Well, I think it's true that the cost of living crisis has been affecting people all across the country in all income brackets. And if you start off with the most basic universal payment, that's child benefit. I mean, the reality is that has always been seen as the best way to tackle poverty, is to make that universal. But we have actually, in the last year, we've given a huge amount of support on cost of living measures. And a lot of them have been extremely targeted to people, to the most vulnerable in society, to the disabled, to the elderly.
Not your electricity payment. I mean, that is arguably a complete waste of money to people who are...
Are you joking, Philip?
To those who don't need it, to those who don't actually look at their ESP bill before they pay it.
What we've done on that is that we substantially increased the fuel allowance. Now, you can only get fuel allowance really in terms of that they are the poorer deciles of society, the elderly, the disabled, the long-term unemployed and that. So we've done that,
Thomas,
separately.
You know what I'm saying is, why on earth does somebody on over 100 grand need 200 quid off their electricity?
Okay, can I just say what we've done? We have given massive amounts, massive increases to fuel allowances, to social welfare payments to those who are poorest. And then we've done this scheme on electricity bills across the board. Quite frankly, Philip, it would cost too much if you were to cut it off at some arbitrary income limit. So that's the way we've targeted it, actually, by giving actually a much greater increase to those who are poorest in society, while recognising that there are cost of living problems across the board and that we don't have the time or the resources to cut it off at certain income limits or to ask people to send
Alison
in income statements.
Does that make any sense to you?
No, I mean, all I'm thinking about, if we can go back to the Minister for Finance's office door, is the man is going to have to lock it and reinforce it, because this just shows what's going to happen. OK, it's still the quieter period in August, but when things kick off again, and you're looking at a three-party coalition, you're looking at a guarantee of European and local elections in June. There have been some whispers even of a general election before that, although the Taoiseach has discounted it. But you're talking about...
He's very busy in August.
Indeed, indeed. You're talking about this kind of, this pressure pot, right? And an absolute, so many competing, the people who get up in the morning, the people who are vulnerable, the people early in the morning, the people who are in trouble with their mortgages. And the worry is that we have all these, I mean, we are awash with the billions, but that with all these competing demands, that we will not use that money soundly. And that no matter how we know that Pascal Donoghue and Michael McGrath get on well, they appear to be in lockstep, but whether they are enough of a bulwark against the competition, particularly a Taoiseach who is worried about his opinion poll, his own opinion poll ratings, his party's opinion poll ratings, his own previous performances in elections. It's a pretty heady mix.
My concern is about from the Fine Gael side in government, you have three junior ministers writing op-eds about how Middle Ireland needs a tax cut. And then from the Sinn Féin opposition, you have this this campaign on mortgage interest relief. The issue with the mortgage interest problem is that it's a very expensive measure to that would disproportionately, I suppose, assist those who have more. And that's a difficult thing for somebody in politics to say. But if you're going to attack the housing problem, if you have 800 million to spend, there are those who can't access mortgages, to those who are at risk of homelessness, to those who are paying very high rents. That's where the energy needs to go. Mm-hmm. And my worry about the conversation up to the budget now is that on one side, in one opposition party, they're talking about a change that would disproportionately affect those who actually have more than those who are at risk of homelessness or can't get on the housing ladder at all. And then from government side, and not the Fianna Fáil side in fairness, but from Fine Gael, it's middle income earners, those who again are being targeted by them in order for tax cuts. And meanwhile, those who are still living at home, can't afford rents, have all these various different vulnerabilities in their lives, are not getting the same amount of attention. And that's a worry for me.
Grundy, it could become eviction ban version 2.0, couldn't it? Because the problem becomes, once you put something like mortgage interest relief in place, when do you take it away and what happens to the people once you do?
Potentially 800 million.
That's part of the problem with a general strategy in giving grants to deal with something like inflation, customers being squeezed when banks are making profits. It's subsidising almost an inefficient system. So why are we not dealing with supply instead of giving people grants or supplements to help deal with an over... I know the government will say it is dealing with supply as much as it can, but we are kind of supplementing inefficient systems instead of tackling with the core problem, which is that banks are making a profit when customers are being squeezed. We heard the item earlier about the AIB Ulster Bank changeover issue, and that in the housing sector we are giving renters grants and talking about increasing those grants this year and the following year because our system of housing people is inefficient and there's not enough state supply to be flexible enough to be able to give homes, to be able to give beds even to people who are most in need. I think part of the problem as well that this could be one of the most political budgets that we've seen of the coalition. We are moving closer to a general election. I don't think it'll be before the locals or Europeans, but there's a good chance it'll be after the next budget, the budget 2025. And that means that this could be the last budget where the government gets a chance to show the effect that their budgetary measures have. And because of that, I think there's a danger that politics will creep into trying to tame inflation, trying to deal with the people who are most at need, which are children at risk of poverty, children in homelessness. The Taoiseach has said this budget needs to focus on children, but all the talk is on measures dealing with the masses rather than targeting them.
And in party political terms, this budget needs to go out and buy the love, doesn't it, Thomas?
No, it needs to protect the people of Ireland. And that's what the last few budgets did without adding to danger. So, and Grainne mentioned this, whatever we do in terms of support, we can't be adding to inflation because then it all comes to naught. It means nothing then if we do that. And we've done that over the last year by all of those extra supports we've given, and inflation has still come down, although it's still there. So I'm not saying the prices aren't still rising, but the rate is much lower. And I think the government has been successful in that. And if you look at our budgets over the last number of years, they have benefited society overall, and the poorest in society have done better than the richest. And that's where we want to be, and that's where Fianna Fáil
wants to be. I'm interested to see if Aon will credit you with that. It is ugly. Trying to bring inflation down has really undesirable social consequences, doesn't it? But it would appear that we might be, I say this very, very tentatively, about to plateau, and that the fiscal measures that have been put in place have solved this particular problem.
We're not in the business of attacking government for the sake of it. I mean, there's measures in education, which I always welcome, from Norma Foley in particular, when it comes to free school books at primary level. But of course, there's other issues in terms of the eviction ban, which was how you started this particular part of the conversation. It's ending, the fact that the measures that we were told were going to come in terms of right of refusal from the tenant to purchase a house, that hasn't happened. The renters bill that we brought in that hasn't been adopted by government that would give more security for renters, all these different measures. You have to, on the broads, I think any government would love to have the financial space and the financial muscle that this government now has. But it's the choices that they make in the next budget. My worry, and I've already alluded to this, is that it will be quite a political budget, as Grainne has said, because the boundary changes are taking place in the Dáil boundaries in the next months. TDs are looking at that. They're looking at a very busy Taoiseach in August and wondering what that means. There are local and European elections next year. There's a whiff of an election in the place. I know Thomas may say that it's not true, but there is. And you wonder at what level.
And isn't there an awful lot? I mean, it struck me actually maybe 6 or 8 weeks ago that there was an awful lot of logic in going for a general election after this. After this budget, particularly from the Taoiseach's point of view, from what I was outlining earlier in terms of that, you know, it doesn't look like things are improving in terms of his party's ratings, and that it might that he you know he might that it could be a pragmatic decision. I'm not saying it'll happen. And once you have power, once you're in the top job, you're going to want to hang on to it. But there really is a certain degree of logic in that rumour sweeping the place and it gripping
what
Leinster
are you
House.
Hearing? Not that.
I think it'll be next year after the next budget.
Yeah. And I'm not saying it won't be. I'm just saying there is a certain logic to the other.
I swore off making political predictions after covering Brexit for so long. It's a dangerous game.
Yeah. I'll predict that there won't be, and that we will have an election in the early part of 2025, probably in March, which is as late as we can go.
What's going to happen with children's allowance?
Well, all of this will be part of the budget discussions, and we have extra money to spend and we want to make sure that's done as fairly as possible. Children's allowance is one of those payments that all the experts agree works because it's universal and it helps everybody across the board. Is one of the payments that helps keep kids out of poverty, which is what the Taoiseach has rightly said. I'm on the Cabinet Subcommittee in relation to child poverty and what we can do from our side. This is a major, major priority of his and of us as well. And let's see what we can do, because the difficulty we have is there's a certain pot of money available for spending, there's a certain pot of money available for tax. And when you start dividing it all up, then the public are saying, this is all I receive as a family. And that's very difficult.
My head is about to explode because I really don't understand how it is that we can talk so much about the need for targeted measures and you can tell us that it has ever been targeted. And now you're talking about a universal payment.
That's the ultimate targeted measure. It's targeted to children. It's targeted to children. I mean, can you show me any evidence, any research which has shown that this is a payment that should be means tested?
Well, I'm in favour of universal payments. I think we need a system where everybody pays in according to their means in terms of tax and everybody benefits. But I also want a country that has free GP care, like most other European countries. I want a country that has absolutely free education, which we don't have. I want an ending to voluntary contributions. And the childcare issue in Ireland is still vastly more expensive, and access to childcare and early years education is much harder in Ireland than anywhere else. So there's certain things that the parents in the north of Ireland would take for granted that when they come to live here are, you know, they balk at the idea of the expenses that they have. So yes, child benefit is an absolutely effective measure. It goes directly to children, and you know, I think if there's an increase, we will welcome it. But it's not instead of making GP care absolutely free, as in lots of EU countries, and the education.
It's a very
we're making progress. I would say this government is, even today, we've opened it up now, GP care for up to 8-year-olds. We want to go further, obviously, but that's
happening
today.
It should have been 18 by now.
Well, that's happening today. The issue, free school books, you've already acknowledged that has happened at primary level. We want to see that go further. And childcare costs have been substantially reduced by this government as well, and I think you have to acknowledge
that. But that's where the argument has to go.
Allison. I think to be seen to criticise child benefit, which is a universal payment, is a bit like, you know, criticising motherhood and apple pie. But there are instances such as this where it can become political. If you're looking at a three-party coalition and trying to get agreement, well, the child benefit is the apple pie. But that doesn't mean, like, everybody has suffered, we'll say, through the last winter and through the cost of living crisis. But do I need an increase in my child benefit? I don't. You know, and have we suffered as a household? Of course we have. But there are far more. You walk around the supermarket, you see the extraordinary increase in groceries and what it costs just to feed those children. So there are many households where that extra cost would be coming in and where it won't go anywhere near the children because it doesn't need to, because there's already enough money.
I want to move on in the last 2.5 minutes of the programme, if I can, please. Thomas Byrne, specifically to your brief, Euro 2028, is that a done deal now that Turkey has shifted its bid?
Well, Turkey is still in the running for our year as well, so that's still technically the case. They're still bidding for 2028, and there's a joint bid has been looked for between Turkey and Italy for 2032. So technically they're still bidding with us, and there's still a competitive process in place, so we're working through that competitive process, and we're certainly hopeful for a positive announcement in October, and we think we can put on a fantastic championships. But I won't say it's a done deal at this particular stage. It's a lot of work to do between the governments and UEFA. In fact, in the next couple of weeks, I'll be hosting a ministerial meeting of the jurisdictions that are involved in our bid, just to sort of tie up some of those loose ends. But we do look forward to a fantastic championships. But it's not done and dusted yet.
Aon?
I know Turkey just bought Shelburne instead. But anyway, I'm not a fan of this. But having said that, like the FAI report on infrastructure was telling, we can't host under 14 girls matches in this country because we don't have the toilets and we don't have the dressing rooms for one third of the clubs. And that's where the focus needs to be. I know I'd be very unpopular for saying that 2028 is not necessarily on top of my priority list as a football fan, but that's where the thought and conversation needs to go.
I know, but it's not as if we're hosting the entire thing by ourselves.
No,
it's
but that's what we're all talking about. It's the castle on the hill stuff. And in fairness to Thomas, and we had a good conversation at all debates that they probably brought forward on the future of football in Ireland, and I think the government are serious about the future of football. But that's where the conversation needs to go. Toilets, dressing rooms, particularly for girls around the country who can't enjoy and be inspired.
But we're not going to have to build new stadia to accommodate
this. It's where the conversation is going in football. It's where the energy is going.
I feel it's
a distraction from the other major issues in the game.
Look, there's also a conversation in every club in the country at the moment. The sports capital program is open at the moment, and there's a really, really strong emphasis on female participation. And we put an emphasis as well on football clubs.
Thomas
to make sure
Byrne,
that they're playing.
Thank you very much, Grunny, Aon O'Riordan, and Alison O'Connor. That is all that we have time for today. The programme was produced by Regina Henley. The series producer is Alistair McConnell. Researcher Kieran Dunn. Broadcast coordinator Jarlath Holland. Excuse me. Our content intern is Suhasini Raghavan. And on sound, Aisling Grufferty. Now at midday, here's Louise Duffy.